Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know.
Good evening, everyone. It's Lenny Godfrey of Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. Thank you so much for tuning in. Boy, do I have an exciting conversation for you this evening. But before I get into that, you know that I always have to remind you of all the information. For those of you who are listening for the first time, you are listening to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser on blogtalkradio.com/S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, the number 2. And you can go to that connection and listen to many of the episodes that we've done since March, and we're about up to 20 weeks. And I think that there's such a wonderful selection of people from the industry, from outside of the industry. There is an eclectic group of people talking about the arts and the influence that the arts has had on them. Also, those people who would like to call in, the number is 516-453-6063. So we have numbers already piling up, and I thank you all for listening, and I thank all my friends in California, in China, in Atlanta, in Detroit, in Chicago, in Texas. I don't want to forget anybody, but thank you all for listening, as well as in the New York area and in the Pennsylvania area. And so here we go. I have tonight what I call the artistic leadership of the Civic Theater that is in Allentown, Pennsylvania, in our wonderful community. And I have two gentlemen. One is the artistic director, and the other is the artistic director and production manager of the Allentown Civic Theater. First, I'm going to introduce you to William, as I will call him, Bill Sanders, who is the artistic director, and I'm going to say hello to him first. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Lenny. So wonderful to be here.
It's wonderful, really, having you. Thank you so much. You have such a great history, such experiences in New York City. I mean, you've done just about every show that anyone would really love to do, from Angels in America to Follies to, you know, 6 Degrees of Separation. Your history is absolutely fabulous. And I'm going to get specifically to where you've studied, where you're from, how long you've been in it, all those things, without talking specific dates, because we're not talking age tonight. But we're talking experience. But I'm going to, before I get in specifically to you, I'm going to go over to the Associate Artistic Director and Production Manager, who is Will Morris. Now I'm going to call him Will, and I'm going to call you Bill. Will, say hello to my listeners.
Hello, everybody. I'm so warmed up from that intro music. I'm feeling it.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, you know, of course, that's from one of the concerts that I did at Symphony Hall right here in Pennsylvania. It was wonderful that I did with the orchestra. And that was not from the concert, but one of the preparation rehearsals that I had with my musical director at the time. And I really look forward to, I listen to it, and it brings back great memories. So thank you very much. Now you are from, both of you are from the South. That's the thing. But you're from Charlotte, North Carolina, right, Will?
Yes, I'm a Southern transplant up here in the land of Pennsylvania.
Yes, yes, yes. And you've been here for a little while. Your association with the Civic Theater has been one that has had some history and experiences to it. And also that you've had an extensive experiences as a performer, as does Bill. So we're going to be talking about that at the same time. But what I want both of you to do is there's so many things that people don't understand about the theater. And as a thespian, as a person who entered the theater as a student first and then as a performer, but through a little stage managing while I was in college, I had to learn all of the positions that people have in the theater. Now, you two have two wonderfully very important positions. Bill, I'd like you to describe for me, if you were talking to a layperson, what an artistic director does in a theater like Civic Theater of Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Without sounding like saying everything, at the beginning it was everything because they didn't have an artistic director to start. And I think what I would say to a layperson is that the artistic director basically shepherds the artistic vision of the theater, meaning what productions we're going to do, how we're going to produce them, and in our case, directs a significant amount of the productions.
Mm-hmm. And Will, you're not finished. Okay, go.
No, I'm good. Continue.
Are you? You sure? You know? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Now, Will, you're the associate artistic director. So I know that there's going to be some similar things there, but I want you to throw in what production manager also means with that. So go, Will.
Yeah. So the associate artistic director assists and provides feedback and personal insight. Basically providing an active soundboard for the artistic director in order to make sure that their vision is exactly what they want. Because sometimes we have to work it out with other people. We can hold everything in our head, but when we say it out loud, it doesn't kind of translate as we think it's going to. So I work very closely with Bill in helping him to create the artistic vision that he wants for the theater. And production management really is that I oversee all of the technical and artistic departments under the umbrella of the artistic director. So I'm kind of the on-ground person checking in with scenery, lighting, costuming, hair and wigs, properties, and sort of reporting back to Bill and making sure that train is running or trains are running as smoothly as possible so that he doesn't have to worry about that and he can concentrate fully on the overall experience that he's looking to create with each production.
Well, so it sounds like between the two of you, you all have everything covered, whether it's artistic or to technical, you've got everything going. So now I want to backtrack. And now, Bill, I know that Will is from North Carolina. Are you from North Carolina also, or did you just go to school in North Carolina?
I attended school in North Carolina. I actually grew up in Reading, which is, you know, just down the road a piece, as they say, in this area.
Mm-hmm.
then went to the American Musical and Dramatic Academy in New York a year out of high school and kind of decided that wasn't for me. And then took another year and went auditioned for a bunch of schools and ended up going to North Carolina School of the Arts in Winston-Salem.
I see. So let's go back even further. So you're from Reading. So tell me about, now Will, get ready because I'm going to ask you these questions. So this time you get a cheat. Next time you start off. Okay.
I love a cheat. Thank you.
You see, we're having a party here now, my friends, already. Tell me about your life in Reading and your family, your parents, your mother, your father. Talk to me a little bit about that.
I grew up over a funeral home. We moved there when I was 6 months old. And it was a really marvelous place to grow up, and it taught me a lot about theatrics. Everyone in my family actually is weirdly a director of some sort. My sister was a teacher, which, you know, she directed a classroom. My other brother was a minister, you know, he directed a congregation, and my other brother is a funeral director. So I think in a strange way that had a real influence on, you know, what I became. I used to play and make up plays that we would rehearse in the funeral home, and there were big mirrors on the one wall, and we would dance in front of the mirrors. And my dad was, I would love to be able to have asked him what he wanted to be, because he was very theatrical. I don't know that coming out of World War II that any of those men and women really were very able to share their dreams or pursue their dreams. They were more about finding what they thought the American dream was. So I don't really know what he really wanted, because I know he fell into funeral directing because his brother did it, and it seemed like a good way to, quote, make money. And my mother, the same thing. I think she probably wanted to be a writer, or she was always reading, and she was always talking about writing a book. But, you know, that their generation were about providing. Like, my father was an incredible provider. He did everything for us. He put four people through college. He was really, you know, an extraordinary, although sometimes very volatile man. And I think that his anger came from, you know, unrealized dreams is really, I think, a theme of my parents, you know.
I see. Younger, was there, you talk about the artistic participation that you had in your environment. Was there an opportunity for you to go out and experience the arts anywhere? Was there a theater? Was there anything? Was there a club or anything that you belonged to?
There was the Reading Civic Opera Society, and I remember my sister taking me when I was 7 or 8 years old to see Oliver with them, and I was, of course, hooked immediately. And I always watched old movies, and I was very lucky to have a teacher. Her name was Mrs. Schellenberger, and she really encouraged us. And I told her that I wanted to direct lip-synced version of The Sound of Music. And I directed the students, and we lip-synced to the record. I still remember Kim Hartrath played Maria, and my friend Carl Hessler played the captain. And at the end, when they sang Climb Every Mountain, I pushed the upright piano next to a desk, next to a chair, and on either side. So they climbed up over the chair and the desk and the upright piano as they climbed the Alps.
Oh,
so,
how wonderful. No wonder you're directing now. So you were directing when you were in, you were 9? That was at the 3rd, 4th grade? Yeah.
Yep.
That's fabulous.
Yep. There was a lot of that.
Well, that's fabulous. It's very interesting that you talk about your family and what they did for a living, and that when we think about funeral home directors, we don't think of it as an artistic endeavor from the outside in, because we always come in contact with them with such trauma, you know, at this
right.
point in time. But looking at it, it is an artistic, you know, piece of work. Absolutely. The preparation and everything else. So thank you for, introducing that to me, because I hadn't even thought of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's very much, very much so that, and it really shaped me and probably messed with me a little bit too, you know, but,
I wasn't going to go there. Trying not to go to the mess me part, you know, because that was, I mean, that's, it kind of, I'm still a little, it's a frightening part for me, you know, I mean, it is a frightening part for me, but it is a necessary part of our lives. But it's also based in an artistic endeavor. And that's something that we never even explored. We haven't even explored that in the theater, I think, a lot, you know? Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things that it does is it brings it, Like, I know that my father was always very concerned with bringing people comfort. And I think in many ways, the arts, regardless of whether they're challenging you or whether they're entertaining you, they're comforting you. So I think it's they're both about a means of comfort, you know?
Yes. Yes, I do. Well, Will, you want to follow that?
Sure.
Tell me about growing up in Charlotte, North Carolina. What was that like?
You know, it's Charlotte's a pretty major metropolitan city in the Southeast. So I did get a very urban upbringing. It's not sort of the, you know, a lot of us, when we think of the Southeast, we think rural, mm-hmm. and we think country, and, you know, those are all things that were part of my adolescence. But it was, you know, it was a pretty urban upbringing. My father was in insurance, and my mother had what I consider the hardest profession out there, which she was a full-time mother at home mm-hmm. for me and my sister. Mm-hmm. There was, you know, it was interesting growing up because I could feel how much love was between my mother and my father, even at a very young age, but how much I felt like I didn't know him because his job pulled him away from the house. He was always traveling. He was never home.
Mm-hmm.
And then in my teenage years, my father, there was kind of this tipping point, at least for the insurance company that he worked with. There was this tipping point where insurance, he felt, this was his experience, he felt that that his company ceased to be about showing up for the people that they are to be helping and turned into, you have to prove to us why we should help you. And he, at that point, showed me the greatest strength that I will ever know. And he said, you know what? This isn't me. I'm out. I'm done. I don't care what that means. I'm choosing away from this because these aren't my moral values. And that was the kind of person he was. And because of that decision, I got to know him in ways that I thought I was never going to get to because his job was so demanding. I wouldn't call it a conservative upbringing, but I was raised in a Roman Catholic household, and we went to church every week and all of the holy days, and I went to daily mass with my grandmother and my mother, and it was a very kind of traditional conservative upbringing. So I think that was healthy because it was stability, but it also in ways inhibited my own kind of self-discovery and access to myself as a queer person. Because of all of that baggage, I didn't even understand that about myself until after I met Bill. And I met Bill when I was 22. I didn't come out until I was 23, 24. But I will say that's on me, because when I told my parents, they were like, great, we love you. Does this make you happy? Awesome. Like,
wonderful.
And so I just like, I mean, I hope that I know not everybody has this experience clearly, but I truly believe that my parents were the most amazing parents. And I'm so incredibly thankful for their guidance and also for their elasticity with me. I didn't start in theater until super late in life. I was heavy into competitive swimming. I was in a trajectory to at least go to nationals. And then I was definitely going to go, my collegial career was going to be all about swimming. And I got dragged to, this was my junior year in high school. I was literally dragged into the auditorium to see a production of Cinderella, of all things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, I don't want to be here. Why am I here? Okay, you can do it. It's only going to be an hour and a half. And by the end of the show, I was like, oh my God, this is the thing. This is the thing I want to do. And I went to my parents, and, you know, they had invested almost a decade at that point of time and money into training me as a competitive swimmer, you know, in the trajectory of trying to get on the national and hopefully the global stage. And all of a sudden I'm like, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to be in theater. And they were like, okay. and those are my parents. Those are my, and I just, I'm so lucky because of that. I'm so lucky.
You both sound like your families really understood what your goals were, what you wanted was the most important thing, not what they wanted for you, but what you wanted was the most important thing. Am I right there? Am I on the right track?
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. This is Bill. Definitely.
Yeah.
Me too.
No, go. You know,
oh, I was just going to say that this is Will. That my parents, you know, understood and were willing to bend their hopes for me, that ultimately they understood that their real hopes for me were my hopes.
Exactly.
And that's a rare thing, I think.
Yeah. I think the three of us were blessed with parents who understood that. I from the first part of my life, I wanted to be a teacher. And then it wasn't until I was a freshman in college that I realized that theater was going to be, music was always there, but theater actually was going to be something that I really wanted to do. And then from there, it spread out. And that's a whole change in after, you know, thinking voice lessons she's going to teach music. She's going to teach voice. That's a whole thing that's very, very different, and understanding that, the blessings of understanding that. Now I'm going to go away from me and get back onto you and ask.
I want to hear about you.
No.
Yeah, I do too. I'm really interested.
Oh, you know, it's just a blessing, you know, how we have woven ourselves to kind of, I think it's a tribute to our parents doing what we still do now, because they've given us the freedom to do that. And I think about that all the time, that, you know, every time I take on a project, it's a tribute to who they are. And it's a tribute to my husband, who's supportive. It's a tribute to those people in our lives who are doing it. But now that I've gotten a glimpse of your childhood and some of what your parents were about, tell me, Bill, what was your mother and father? Tell me their names. Tell me their names.
Frank and Gloria.
Frank and Gloria. Will, your parents?
Richard and Mary.
You know, it's I always like to hear the names, because even though I don't know what they look like, they really become real people to me, you know, rather than
mm-hmm.
our parents. You know, that category. You kind of start thinking. My parents were Fred and Maggie. Fred and Maggie. And, you know, it's really one of those things where they become real to you, like you're crafting. For me, it's like you're crafting the character. I begin to start thinking about your parents and what colors they liked, and what did your mother like to fix for dinner, either one of you, and what were your favorite meals and all of that. And then specifically the things that you experienced in your lives that influence you right now in the jobs that you have, the artistic influence that and the freedoms that they gave you that you bring into the job that you have now. And going beyond the job description for both of you, I want to ask, there in the information that I've been reading about you, Bill, one of the things that you did that that stood out for me was that in the Pennsylvania Diversity Network, you got a community arts award for your commitment to bringing LGBT-themed work to Lehigh Valley. How important is that for you?
That's always been a guiding light for me and was part of the reason, is a huge part of the reason that I decided to start a career at Civic, because after they hired me the first year, and that was really at the height of the AIDS crisis, and I really wanted to do a production of The Normal Heart, and there was a little bit of pushback, and the board met, because this is when the board was approving, you know, every decision. It isn't quite like that anymore, but I said that it was important to me, and they got on board with it, and that meant a lot to me. And mm-hmm. as I went through the years, I always tried to find the stories that spoke to the LGBTQIA plus community. And I felt that it was important as a person who is other to tell those stories. And we probably have done, I don't even know what the number is, but we've done so many, and it was never for any reason other than the fact that these plays need to be seen. And that's always been another guiding principle, that we want to do things that aren't going to be done by anyone else, that aren't going to be seen in the Lehigh Valley otherwise. And I mean, we clearly do a lot of things that people that are entertaining and that people do want to see and that have been done mm-hmm. before. But mm-hmm. I think we've always tried to be really aware of the fact that there's a lot of work out there that wouldn't be seen had we not done it at Civic. I did a story for somebody once where it was like 24, 26 plays that were premieres in the Lehigh Valley. And mm-hmm. of those, a nice percentage of them were for the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, I'm going to get back to that premise, but I want to go to Will, because Will, in the same vein, I get in reading some of the things that you sent me, and the listeners, you need to know that I asked people to send me a things that they found important in their lives, you know, early in lives. And then I kind of read through it and try to sneak online and find out all y'all's business, of course. And try to find out the things that fit into the avenue of what we're talking about. And you had an experience that you talked about, you said it, that you went on tour for a year on a company. And in that year, you really had a self-awareness that you had not gotten prior. Explain to me what you mean by that.
It came right after. So in 2005, I interned at Civic. There was an acting internship at that time at Civic Theater. And then when that finished up, I went and auditioned for a bunch of places, and I was cast in a year-long tour with the National Players out of it's out of Olney Theater Center. It's an offshoot of DC Theater, and it's
yes, yes. I live in the DC area, so I know it. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
and its claim to fame is that it's America's longest running touring company. Mm-hmm. I was on its 58th tour. I think it's up to like 4 million at this point. I don't keep track of it, but It's been around a long time. It's been around for a while. But it was, you know, it was the first time in my life that I was completely unmoored from a sense of stability, being on the road and being in a different place every day, which was really exciting, which was really cool, but also emotionally tumultuous because, you know, I discovered throughout that process that I as an individual desire an anchor point to come back to, and I felt like I didn't have that. And to kind of supplement that, it was definitely that year was my sexual awareness awakening. I finally understood and really gave myself permission to understand that I was putting on a facade for years. Mm-hmm. And that it was okay to break past that, and that life was going to be okay, and that it was actually going to be better. And you know, I did that thing that we like to refer to as the kind of gay virgin falling in love helplessly. Thing, it's a real thing, and I fell in love with one of my tour mates, and we had a romantic relationship, and you know, now I have years of perspective, and I completely like understand why it all went down the way it did, but he very much pulled away from that situation after a period of time because I was like, it's like all of a sudden that you've been seeing black and white for years, and then all of a sudden you're allowed to see all of the colors. And mm-hmm. so I was dealing with that, and I was on sensory overload, and I was craving that anchor point that I say that I need so much. And I was putting that on him, and that was totally unfair. It was totally unfair. But because I was so unmoored from everything, and because I was also having this really kind of great artistic experience, that helped me grow in ways I never expected. And it's also what led me back to Civic, actually, mm-hmm. At the end of it all.
Well, you know, I am so impressed with, first of all, thank you, both of you, your candor, you know, talking about what's important to you. And I share, you know, the interest of information about things that people don't know about. And for me, one of the most important things, again, in the theater is that it is where people learn about things that don't commonly come to them. And I see that in your... Now, if I'm wrong with this season, let me know. But in your season, are you not doing The Color Purple?
Yes,
we are.
I've been wanting to do The Color Purple for 5, 6, 7, 8, whenever it came out.
Yeah. What do you want people to know about The Color Purple? Why did you decide that?
I, like I said, we've been wanting, I was so moved by the first production and then also moved by the revival, and I adored mm-hmm. the book back mm-hmm. when I was living in New York, and when the book came out, we read it voraciously, my roommates and I. And when they announced the musical, I was like, how and who and what? And LaShawn's was so beautiful in the first production, and Cynthia Erivo. Mm-hmm. But the story mm-hmm. for me is so about a person who's put upon, and regardless of what happens to them, they find love, whatever you want to call it, love, joy, God, and it guides them through. And that story for me is very much what my story is, even though it's not my story, clearly.
It is your story. It is your story, and it is your story. Let me just say my opinion, and then I'm going to let you all talk because you all are supposed to be talking, not me. But I find that my story is in the story of many LGBT stories, that I share some of the elements in it, not understanding who I am, breaking down in groups of people physically, and not understanding what that does to people. There's an ignorance about all of this that I think is a responsibility for us to clear up and to keep on clearing it up until it doesn't need to be cleared up anymore. So I believe it is
so
a
true.
Story. It is a story. And I do believe that it should be told by people who understand the story. I have a thing that I've written, because you have to be in the kitchen. You have to understand what goes on in the kitchen before you talk about cooking in the kitchen.
And I have to say, too, that when it was first, I was so thrilled to be working on it. And I have to say, our managing director came to me and said, but you can't direct it because it's not your story. And I came to understand that. We are having a guest director. I'm serving as producer, so I'm going to be there helping. I felt that she was right, Diane Donahue, our managing director, and I know that Will certainly was on board with her on that decision too. I don't mean to speak for you, Will. I'm sorry. Honestly, it was one of the most in recent memory, I'm getting emotional talking about it. It was one of the most heartbreaking days to let go of it, but knowing that I had to. One of the most heartbreaking days I've had at the theater in recent memory, because I love it so much, but I know that it's the right thing. It's the right thing to do.
Now, first of all, let me just say that we have just only about 20 minutes left. See, I told you how fast this goes.
Oh, no. Oh, my God.
I know.
It does go by.
Mercy.
Yes. And I haven't even touched what I want to talk about. But anyway, I have to do this. I agree. And no one has asked me, but I'm going to put my two cents in, I agree, but I also take pause in it, because as a director myself, I direct things that, I've directed a production of Greenwood about the 1921 massacre, but I've also directed Death of a Salesman. It is that universal story. We have to get to the point where we just don't think because a person looks a certain way or has a certain lifestyle that they understand, that gives them the license to understand. Now, I'm not saying your decision is incorrect. I'm just saying that with the passion that you talked about, I'd have to argue with you about you're not directing it. I'd say, well, maybe you want a consultant that's there, but I'd have to say that, I think the safe thing that people do is say, well, that's somebody else's story and you got to do. We have to get to a point, and we're not there yet. And so I understand the decision. Mm-hmm. We have to get to a point where we understand all of our stories. And
that's precisely
where we need to get in the theater, because we lead in the theater. We are the leaders. The audience follows what we tell them to do. They come into the theater. We give them a convention. We say, okay, everybody in the theater is going to be purple. They went, oh, okay, we're going to be purple. Okay, they believe us.
Yes.
So we have to believe ourselves.
I agree with you 100%, but I don't think it's the time. So I think we did make the right decision. I think at this moment in our history.
That's okay. The time will come. The time will come. And I'll be sitting right there watching you. when the time comes. And I'll say, yes, that's what it is. That's, you know, I don't want you, you have stories in you. Some of them are my stories. Some of them are your stories. Would you say to me, Will or Bill, either one of you can answer this, but you got to tell me who you're talking, who's talking when you do. Would you say to me that I'm not qualified to direct a piece on, to direct the normal heart? Because I'm not.
Go ahead,
this
Will.
This is Will. I'll jump in. This is Will. Absolutely not. I think, of course you can. And I think that's the beauty of being artists. Artists are people who are able to emotionally interpret a story and create an experience for an audience that is honoring of that story. So I think that our great gift of artists is to be able to reach outside of ourselves into these other people, into these other experiences, into these other stories, and pull out the heart of it so that we can then figure out how to tell a narrative about that heart to make sense and create the emotional catharsis that the story requires. And I do believe that anybody who is called upon to be an artist is capable and should be, in order to advance themselves as a person and as an artist, to tell stories outside of their own sphere. Absolutely.
Yes. You know, I do understand the caution that we have to take, because for years there were people directing things, especially about my history, that were incorrect. They were, inaccurate.
Right.
And so people
right.
are very careful now. And I understand and I agree with that, because it's about my voice. But I am not insensitive to the fact that when an artist comes to me and shows me that they understand what my voice is about and they don't necessarily look like me, that they could do that story. That's where I want us to be. That's
yeah.
where, before I leave this earth, that's where I want us to be. We may not all be ready for it now, and there are not a lot of people who look like you who can direct my story, and I'm not going to let them direct my story. You
uh-huh.
understand what I'm saying?
Right,
but,
right.
Yep.
Yes,
but,
absolutely.
You know, but when I think that there's someone there, I've been asked to direct something because I'm a woman, it's a woman's story. I said, well, you know, there have been men who really understand women, and then there have been those who don't. What we have to develop is a radar about that.
Yeah.
And figure out
right.
who does, who doesn't. We have to understand who can do it. And, you know, and the politics get into, we are not about politics. We are about the arts. And we cannot let the politics get in. See, don't get me. I'm starting to preach. I'm through. I'm going to go to my next question. Okay.
It
means so much to me. It really does. And I'm looking forward to that production. And I know it's going to be absolutely fabulous. But I'm also looking forward to Elf. And oh my goodness, you are a Charlie Brown Christmas. Oh, my God. Is that going to be, like, so much fun? And the auditions for that have got to be absolutely fabulous. Are the children ready for that? That audition, are they starting to get excited about it? Something like that?
For Christmas Carol, you mean?
Yes, Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
For Christmas Carol.
Yeah, they're always excited, and it's really funny because they always think that, oh, maybe I'll be a Cratchit this year. I was an urchin last year, and there's always like a lot of hubbub about mm-hmm. what, who's going to be what. And, you know, the funny thing about that is there really is no hierarchy. It's not like the School of American Ballet where you go from being a snowflake in the Nutcracker to an angel to whatever. It's always just
yeah.
The audition and who's the most talented and who's right for the part. But I'm so excited that they get to do it again, you know, this year, the traditional one, because
mm-hmm.
last year before COVID, we did 1944, which was a woman in a cosmetics firm, which was fun and wonderful, but we had no idea that we'd be going like a whole year without doing the original. And I think going back
yeah.
to the original one is going to be really fun.
Well,
yeah.
tell me again, and now, you know, now we're down to 15 minutes. And so if anyone has any questions, you better ask them quickly because, you know, we're talking here. So you're going to probably get down to the last minute. What differences do you think exist in the necessity of having this theater, which is a community theater? Now, I don't know where you stand with at this point in time with union and non-union, but explain that to us. And the commercial theaters that we have in New York that do certain other kind of things, what are the advantages, disadvantages? What do you, if you had to explain it to a person and convince them that both exist for different reasons, what would you say? I'm going to start with you, Will. I'm going to start with you, Will.
With me? Okay.
Yeah.
I think that for me, the difference is that, like, commercial theater, Broadway theater, it exists for the transient audience, the audience that is there to come in and come out and not have an emotional connection to the place, just the experience. And I think Civic being a local community theater, especially with something like Christmas Carol, it carries an emotional grounding. It carries a heart that is there that you can't experience anywhere else. You know, when you guys were talking about Christmas Carol, I kept thinking how humbling it has been for me to watch these kids grow up through Christmas Carol, like watch them start as teeny tiny urchins and then play adult roles, like over the course of, you know, five to 10 years. It's humbling, and that's an experience that you don't get anywhere, And I think, Carol, but with all of our season, what we're trying to, like, the pie in the sky ultimate goal of it all for us as a local nonprofit community-based theater is that we're going to give you as much of production values and sleekness and precision and artistic excellence as we can in comparison to these Broadway theaters that have a mountain worth of staff when we only have three people. And so we're going to do that as much as we can. But what we're really going to do is really get to the core of the story and strip away all of the kind of necessary glitz and the need to make a bottom line, even though we are a theater and we need to make a bottom line, but it's not about that. It's about storytelling and enriching our community, that the people that come in come through our doors multiple times because we are hopefully creating a place that continually enriches the community.
Oh, well, thank you. And Bill?
Yeah, I piggyback on that by saying that, and I agree, those beautiful, Will. I think that one of the things that I felt really strongly about is I always wanted to be in a company. And what we've done is created a little bit of a company, an open company. People can come in, people can go out. And I wanted it to be a place where actors who are local, there are a lot of local people who have decided not to have a career, who have left their career, who are aspiring to a career, who have a lot of talent. But I wanted to give them a place where they could go, where they knew they were going to be taken care of, where they knew they were going to have enough rehearsal, where they knew they were going to have production values, where they knew they were going to be nurtured and it was going to be a giving environment. And I think that is one of our biggest strengths and one of the things that I'm most proud of. So I would say that having that locally is so much better for me. I mean, because I was doing some stuff in New York and I decided to come back because I missed that sense of company and goodness, you know. And I want to do it for these people. You know, you look around Lincoln Center and you're like, do I really want to do this for these people? You know, like, I don't know. So I love the people in the area. You know,
you know, I think that the necessity for both kinds of theater, because you know, this is, I find, the grassroots theater where people really learn the love of theater. You get a chance to explore how it comes together and appreciate it. When you do commercial theater, and I've done so much of it now that, you know, what you do is you get very particular about where you want to work, because some of it is so commercial that it doesn't resemble the artistic endeavor that you want to do. That's another level, and to a point, pure entertainment, and there's a place for it. But I want to emphasize that there's a place for both, and how invaluable our lives would be without a civic theater, without those theaters around. Now, you know, now I'm going to say this, and you're not going to believe this, but we have less than 10 minutes to talk.
My word.
I told you.
Mercy. Yes.
I have not gotten, you know, I mean, I have a couple more questions. I cannot start them now because I want you, I don't have to have you both come back. See, that's the reality. You're going to have to come back.
Wonderful.
You know, because of the simple
Perfect.
Fact that I want to know about the moments in your lives that turned you into where you are now, the happiest moments, the saddest moments. I think that people have to really understand who we all are as artists. And not to think, you know, in my case, most people think that I'm sitting at home eating bonbons, you know. And I don't understand why they, you know, I work all the time, so I don't understand where they get that from. But but I work really hard at all the different facets that I do, and I want them to understand how you do too, and how proud I am of that organization over there. And give Ray a big kiss for me when you see him.
I will, definitely.
Yes. He's a darling. He and Eileen are just wonderful. But
I
have to, you know, yes, they are. We have a community here where people are very, very supportive of us in the arts. And I'm determined to kind of unite us all as we weave and to support one another. And that there's a season where we recommend somebody, you've come to my production, now go over there and see that. And, you know, like in Miracle on 34th Street, when Gimbel's was telling people to go to Macy's and Macy's was telling people to go to Gimbel's, you know. That's my dream. That's my dream of how this community can feed each other and understand what it is, because this is the Genius Belt. This is where a lot of these people lived in Lehigh Valley and brought things from here to New York and created a lot of wonderful things. But it all started here with us, and we still have this a wonderful artistic community that that we have. Now, in the last 5 minutes, do you have something that you both want to say before I talk about my guest next week? I want you all to have take a couple of minutes apiece and talk and say anything that you want to say, because I can't get into my questions now. I have to have you come back. They're too deep. talk about, if you can, for a minute or two, what the theater means to you and what it's done for your life, where you are now. I'll start with Bill.
I feel like after 30 years, which is an incredibly, you know, gratifying and incredibly long amount of time, I feel like we're at, after our renovation, because the theater's been renovated and they worked very hard to get this renovation done, and it's so exquisite.
Yes.
I feel like we're at a place that if we can do what you said and continue to support each other and come out for each other and not come out for want of a better word, snob appeal, but come out to be entertained and to mm-hmm. gather and mm-hmm. to be supportive, I think mm-hmm. that we're at a crossroads now where I think things can really change, not only for civic, but for the entire arts community. Because I love what you're doing, because I really think that it's important that the community becomes stronger and stronger and stronger and more supportive of each other, and do what we can to support all of the arts organizations, all of the theaters, the symphony, the Shakespeare Festival during the summer, and the colleges. I mean, we try to do as much as we can, but I think people can always do more. And we need to make them red letter days when things are opening. And we need to, you know, and I think that that energy and what you're trying to do right here is a part of that. And I hope that it continues.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you. That's wonderful. Will?
You know, we all as artists over the course of the pandemic might have been through it. You know, you talked about this at the beginning about how, you know, we're the last hired and first let go, and have been made to feel non-essential when really, and this to piggyback off of Bill, this is exactly what your program is talking about, how essential all of this, how essential artists are for the soul of a community. And, And how, for me, Civic has provided that soul for me, that anchor point, that artistic home. I feel so safe as an artist at Civic, and able to explore. And I have learned such a vast amount of knowledge in working with all of the artists, especially, of course, my counterpart here today, Bill, over the years. And all I want to do, and again, this is what both of you are saying, all I want to do is create that for others and make the community grow and make it expand and make all of the organizations in the Lehigh Valley feel like this cohesive, supportive theater scene. And like that for me is everything. It's everything.
Well, thank you. Both of you have been just absolutely fabulous. I mean, I can't wait. We're going to continue this for a few minutes on the video, you know, the after show afterthoughts. So you take a few minutes, and then you know how to do your Zoom invitation so people can see who I've been talking to. And that's really one of the popular things that happens. But I can't thank you both enough, because you all have been absolutely wonderful, very candid with your information. I could talk to you for another long hour, but we can't do it. We only have 2 minutes left. So I'm going
to
say thank you both. I'm going to say goodbye to you for a few minutes. And then I'm going to say, go ahead. Did you want to say something?
No, I had nothing.
Oh, okay.
No, just thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. No, I'm going to turn this over to next week, where I have my one of my oldest friends in the business, Anne DeSalvo, from Gemini Broadway. Now, you know, I'm not hungry.
Yeah,
I have 90 seconds. I'm not hungry. I'll just pick. Annie is going to be on the show next, and she's a hoot. We were a hoot together in a Christopher Durang play, so you can imagine what that was like. Woo! Ah. So
that's amazing.
I'm going to say thank you so much. I'll see you in a few minutes, and I'll see my listeners. You'll hear me next week with Anne DeSalvo at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And thank you for tuning in. I'll see you next week. I'll see you on the radio. Lenny Godfrey, Straight No Chaser.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you.
You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me.